Welcome once again to The Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, and my co-host, Gwyn Sheltimer. Each week, we visit with a local author, get an introduction to their work, sometimes a glimpse into their lives, and find out what prompts them to write. And then we give them an opportunity to hear them read from their work. We're very pleased to welcome Kim Grove this week. Kim has spent 20 years in the media industry. She's been published in the Globe and Mail, the Toronto Star, the Christian Science Monitor, and many other local publications. She enjoys looking for writing gems in other people's newspaper articles. She has a BA from the University of Toronto and a creative writing diploma from George Brown College. Her book, Stories Inked, co-authored with Judy Geller, has just come out, and she has edited Gathering Families, an anthology of stories about families. It will be released this spring. So, Kim, what have been the major influences on your writing career?
Well, I guess when I took an English degree, I was reading a lot, and I think that was a big influence. I had some excellent professors, and they encouraged me to look at fictional techniques rather than just reading and enjoying the story, but actually looking how a story was put together.
Do you have a favorite book about writing that has helped you?
Yes, Natalie Goldberg wrote a book called Writing Down the Bones, and I actually have it in tape, and I listen to it a lot when I'm just doing something that doesn't take much thought, and I just want to listen to her. Yeah, so it's more of a, rather than reading, it was actually tapes that influenced me a lot. It's funny, she's very popular, even though she's more popular about writing rather than her novels and that kind of thing. It's just her way of expressing herself.
I haven't read that book. What sort of topics does she talk about?
She basically talks about different students she's had and what techniques she's used with them, and she just talks about exercises for writing that are very helpful.
Tell us a little about your recent publication, Stories Inked, and how you developed this collection of memoir writing for the book.
Yes, actually, this was a book that I was commissioned to do. I had done and edited a book, a memoir for a woman who loved music, and her book was called Joy of Music. And her daughter really liked what I did with her mother's book. And so she commissioned me to interview 20 Holocaust survivors that were influenced by an organization called ORT. ORT teaches, it's an educational program. So students, even today, still benefit by ORT. They can study different skills, like even dressmaking, mainly the skills that we would learn in a community college. So it's not that common in Canada. But in other countries, if you wanted to have a trade so that you could help yourself get a career going and help your family, you would go to this school called ORT.
So this was something that was set up after the war, was it?
Well, actually, it was set up before the Second World War, but it became very instrumental in the Second World War. When Holocaust survivors had to start a new life and they had no skill, they went to these schools and gained a skill and then went on to do really wonderful things. So it's some people who have benefited by the school have, you know, poured money into it afterwards because they saw the benefit of it. And others have just talked about it and made it more popular around the world.
Could you read to us for something out of Stories Inc?
This is a story of Bronya Becker. You'll probably find at the end you know the name Becker already, but I'll leave that to you to find out. When the Nazis invaded Kosovo, Poland in 1941, Bronya had already suffered hardships. Her mother had died of typhus, and Bronya had barely survived it. Two of her brothers had been part of a group of 300 men that the Nazis had taken into the forest for inspection and shot. The remainder of Bronya's immediate family was murdered during the invasion of Kosovo, most of them perishing in a bunker under her house. When the Nazis discovered that her family was in hiding in the cave-like structure under their house, they sealed the air pipes and left. Soon after the pipes were sealed, I got dizzy, and I didn't feel good, and that I don't remember anything. Bronya thinks that she fell face down on the ground while her loved ones used up the air, frantically gasping for breath, realizing their fate. When her aunt and neighbors pulled the 10 bodies, her father, sister, nieces, nephews, brother, and sister-in-law, from the bunker, Bronya's eyelashes flickered. Someone poured cold water over her to revive her. When I opened my eyes, I saw a lot of people standing in front of me. I asked, "Where is my sister?" In their faces, I knew already what had happened. Bronya was only 19. Bronya's boyfriend, Joseph Becker, 7 years her senior, came to her aid after her family died. She met him before the war when he was in the Polish army. At that time, she was still a young girl of 13. She recalls the first time this tall, handsome man stood before her in a military uniform. "Little girl, do you like my shiny buttons?" he asked her. Looking up at him, she replied, "No, I like you." At that time, she could not have imagined that years later, he would be the man that would help her endure the horrors of the Holocaust and the man that she would marry. During the war, Bronya wasn't able to go to school. Every moment was spent on survival. "We all had to run away or sit and wait for the Germans to come and kill us. Many Jews survived the war by being hidden by non-Jewish families. Bronya's husband had many non-Jewish friends. One of them hid her and Joseph in his home for 10 months. This friend was very outspoken in his protest against the killing of innocent people. However, such objections were not tolerated. One night, a Ukrainian group collaborating with the Nazis came and murdered him. Once again, Bronya and Joseph were on the run. They continued finding refuge in barns in the area until they located the house of some old friends of Bronya's father. They were surprised that Bronya hadn't been killed. When they saw me, they started to cry. They were relieved to see Bronya, and it was a reminder of how terrible times had become. The couple risked the lives of their 6 children by giving Bronya and Joseph shelter. For the next 4 months, Bronya and Joseph lived like moles, digging out the potato cellar in the back garden to hide their tired, weak bodies. For Bronya, it felt like they were being buried alive. In July 1944, the Russians liberated Poland. Bronya returned to her parents' large brick house, the house that her father had built. Only the foundation was left. It was like a cemetery, the whole town, a ghost town. Nobody was there. When Bronya and Joseph moved to Lwów, Poland, Bronya became a secretary. Joseph's new job required him to travel, so he was often away for days. His new employment was to chauffeur Russian army personnel from Lwów to the front. There were times when Bronya envied the dead. Left alone with her nightmares, she found life intolerable. "Next time you will come home," she told Joseph, "you won't find me. I'll commit suicide." Joseph knew that Bronya's struggle to live had sucked the strength from her. He wanted to help her. "You need to have a baby. That will help you," he said. He was right. Bronya got pregnant, and all she started to think about was their future. When the war ended in 1945, land was divided among the Allies. Lwów became part of Russia. Bronya and Joseph didn't want to be part of communist Russia, so they moved to Łódź, which remained part of Poland. When Marilyn, Bronya's baby, was born, Bronya's time was spent thinking of how best she could care for her infant. "My baby saved my life. She brought purpose to a life that had become empty." In Łódź, Bronya and Joseph were still afraid. They hid that they were Jewish. They longed for the freedom and comfort to be with others who understood them. Learning of a displaced persons camp in Bindermeichen near Linz, Austria, they left Łódź and journeyed there by train. They resided there for 2.5 years. During the time, Joseph worked for the Jewish Joint Distribution Committee. In the DP camp, there was an art school that enabled Bronya and Joseph to fulfill their dreams. "I had such a beautiful sister. I wanted always to look like her. I thought this training would help me." Bronya took a beautician's course that would help connect her to the memory of the beautiful, vibrant sister she had lost in the war. The course gave her the opportunity to learn more about the challenges and trade secrets that make one beautiful. Joseph dreamed of escaping to a place far away from the ghosts of the war, or it provided him with the training as a furrier, a skill he would need because shortly after their schooling, they moved to Canada. Ort gave Bronya and Joseph an opportunity to change their lives. When they arrived in Canada, their last name changed. "When we crossed the sea, I lost the sea in Becker." The Beckers were brought to Toronto by the fur industry. On one occasion, when times were tough, Joseph pleaded with the fur company owner not to let him go because he had a wife and child to support. However, the inevitable happened when the owner didn't have enough work and had to lay him off. Joseph was desperate. He needed to find a way to make a living, so he recruited 2 men from his former company, and together they started Quality Slipper Company Limited. He successfully operated this business, making vests and slippers for the next 28 years. Thinking back to the tragic death of her family, Bronya remembers the moment when she grabbed the tie of the doctor who brought her back to consciousness in the bunker. She screamed, "Why the heck did you wake me up? I was so happy sleeping." Although Bronya endured a lot after that tragic day, she always expresses gratitude to those who helped her continue to live. Bronya's dream of becoming a beautician was never realized, but there is no doubt that her ambition was passed down to her daughters. Her eldest child, Marilyn, is a professor at Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles. Her youngest, Jeannie, is a well-known TV host on the Fashion Television Channel and is editor-in-chief for Fashion Quarterly magazine.
Ah. Thank you, Kim. Now we'll take a short break.